Welcome to Lumber Dandy and Friends, everybody, the only adventure fiction podcast chronicling the life and times of the legendary Lumber Dandy. My name is Benjamin David, and I'm glad you're here. Now, I can't wait to share today's story with you, so I hope you're somewhere getting cozy and comfortable, because in about 30 seconds, right after this brief message, we're jumping right back in where we left off last episode. As the steamboat, captained by Regina Lee, sailed on toward Portland, Beau started seeing little houses and outposts and emporia, and a few wagons on paths leading from the shore into town that looked almost like proper streets if he squinted hard enough. Maybe after they found this dog Porter had mentioned, Beau could stop in at a local barber's after all. But nope, that instant there was a cracking sound that pierced the silence of the wee hours, so loud Beau instinctively grabbed his backside, certain his daddy had just whooped him one for shooting off his big mouth. He hadn't, but there was someone cracking an actual whip on the east bank. It was One-Eyed Barnaby, the Cyclops of the Stodge Gang, and at the end of his whip was a grappling hook Beau wished he'd had on top of that waterfall. The hook landed on the railing of the steamboat and lodged itself tight. The Beau swayed and slowed, and then there was another hook, and another, and another, and another. Moe shouted the alarm, and Regina, Porter, and the W's ran deckside to see what the trouble was. And that's when the light shifted in just the right way for them to see the entire Stodge gang, crotchety and tight-jawed and jeering at the boat like hungry jackals. And there, standing on a rock, hollering orders to his men, was Mr. Ornery Stodge himself, the guy soon Beau would learn was the nastiest nemesis of the fraternal order of Warm Brothers and all their allies. Oh man, Beau thought. He may be mean, but he sure is handsome. Regina shouted to Beau to focus and to Moe to keep the boat steady as they could, while she and Porter nimbly went from grappling hook to grappling hook, cutting ropes to free the boat. But even as they did so, three cannonballs landed in the center of the deck, sending splinters as big as branches flying. Regina, Beau, and Porter worked to minimize the damage, while for their part, the W's sat quietly drinking tea and occasionally offering a good-natured heave-ho to their friends. It was hard to rattle the W's, except with terrible poetry. Especially old Willoughby Whitmore and their unflappable air was one of the chief reasons Mr. Ornery Stodge's hatred of them seemed now about to erupt in all-out war. Porter yelled to Moe to steer the boat closer to the west bank, but Regina hollered out, "No way!" Apparently, Regina was a bit of a wanted woman in these parts, and sure as cinnamon, Beau clocked a fleet of five small rowboats coming toward them from the west, with a short man standing in the bow waving a dingy flag that said Sheriff, and was bigger than the officer himself and kept getting wrapped around his face in the wind. It was a little pathetic, honestly, but when Regina caught Beau giggling, she said he wouldn't be laughing if they got caught, and the boat was taken on water, and that sure snapped the Lumber Dandy to attention. The Stodge gang coming at them in nine swift birch canoes from the east, the police encroaching from the west. Things weren't looking good, and Beau knew this was a tight spot they found themselves in. But he still took a quick moment to thank the sky, because you know what? He still hadn't had this much fun since yesterday. Regina said their only option was going to be to try to get the boat to the point where this river joined up with another mightier one and hope to sweet Hades that the current would give them just enough of a lead the others could scatter while she sailed on to divert the assailants. And then it occurred to Beau, wait a minute, didn't I just spend a whole bunch of time getting myself here this lavender axe, and probably this might be a good time to put it to use, yep. And so he winked at Regina and turned to face the sheriff's fleet, and with one big heave, he threw the axe sideways through the air. It catapulted over the water and then down into it like a flaming lavender dervish courting a mermaid, slicing the bottoms off of all five police boats before flying naturally right into Beau's hand. Well, at that, everybody stopped. Beau's new pals, the Stodge gang, and for a half second before they sank into the water, the sheriff and his underlings. Regina and Moe roared, the W's clapped like they were watching the finale of some swashbuckling operetta, and even Porter's chest swelled with hope that maybe now the tide was turning in the Warm Brothers' favor. But the celebration was short-lived, As the Stodge gang's canoes had gained on the wounded steamboat, and even as the threat of arrest awkwardly swam back to the west bank, the Stodge ambush was waxing perilous. Everyone in these parts knew Ornery Stodge had 16 strapping sons, and as Regina peered 35 feet down over the side of the boat, she could see all of them climbing up. Beau cocked his throwing arm to one side and wound up, ready to cut the ropes and send the Stodge boys a-swimming, but Regina stopped him. To her, it may have been one thing to sink an enemy's boat when it was already in the water, but it was a different and, to her, unsavory thing altogether to intentionally cut these ropes and cause 16 boys to fall 35 feet straight down into icy waters. That just went against her code, enemies or no. The W's and Mo agreed, Porter did not. Beau thought about the vision he'd seen in Grey Damien's pool, how he'd seen himself becoming so enamored with his strength that he forgot to use it in support of good living and happy progress for all the people of the land, and, well, that was enough to get him to side with Regina. He put the axe back in its holster and asked what the plan was, because he had just this minute decided that if anybody wanted the lumber dandy on their crew, they were going to have to take a cue from Regina and rise above the mean, cruel, belligerent folk of the world and show a different path. Porter grit his teeth so hard at that he could have bit through his banjo strings, but then relented, seeming to be the only one who understood this really was a battle. Regina took the helm of her ship from Mo and rushed the others to the front of the boat. Porter untied a tiny lifeboat, which was thankfully hung up on the opposite side from the Stodge boys. He helped the W's climb in, and Mo began lowering it on pulleys. Porter gave Beau a brass snuff box and instructed Beau not to open it till he was safely away from this debacle. And then he and Mo hopped into the lifeboat with the W's and got it in the water. Porter shook out the green carnation scarf, which transformed into a sail, and a helpful wind picked up to carry them from harm's way. As they sailed out of sight, Beau could just make out Porter yelling to him, "Go north, past Cape Disappointment, then east. Find Turtle Cove and kneel before the Redwood Knights. They know what you need." And then he heard Whitmore's voice in his head again, telling him all would be well with a bit of patience, faith, and grit. And Wildebury whistled, "Toodaloo, my lumbering dandy. Oh, and change your shirt. You look a fright." And Mo shot Beau a look to say, "You'll see me again." And the lifeboat dipped below the horizon, propelled to where Beau knew not by the billowing wings of Porter's scarf. He waved goodbye and sure hoped Mo was right. Regina called, "Release the logs," which he thought was a funny thing to say, and scratched his head as to what she meant. She yelled it again, thinking maybe being the lumber dandy took a little time to grow into, and pointed off the starboard bow at a cluster of big logs tied up. Oh, Beau thought, those logs. And he wondered for a second if he should try to be more observant before untying the knot and letting the logs fall in the river, where they picked up momentum and began rolling quickly upstream. He turned around to see Regina punching and kicking, taking on four of the Stodge boys and knocking them on their butts with ease. But then eight more climbed up on deck and ganged up on her, using her boat's own ropes to tie her up. "Jump, you handsome idiot," she yelled to Beau with a smile, and he leapt off the deck, landed on the biggest of the logs, which he started rolling like a tap dancer. Once he got a good rhythm going and was speeding away from the sinking ship, trusting he'd see its noble captain safe and sound again someday, he realized just how exhilarated he was to find himself on some sort of mission, and how proud he was to be so good at log rolling, which was a skill he'd never tried but always figured he would possess. And, well, y'all know what happened. Beau got so proud of himself, he started growing upward and outward big enough that each tap of his foot caused that log to roll 50 full feet through the water. Soon, he was approaching Cape Disappointment like Porter had said, but our cocky lumber dandy, well, I'm ashamed to say he missed his turn, got caught in the ferocious current, fell off his log, and was swept north through the chilly Pacific waves and washed up on the shore of one of a small cluster of islands, not knowing where he was, how to get back, if his friends were okay, and most frustratingly for Beau, where his next hot meal was coming from. And that's when he looked up, soaked and briny, to see the business end of the sharpest spear ever carved in this dimension, not more than 3 inches from his thick, scruffy neck. "Good Lord," Beau thought to himself. I really do need a shave. Who's holding the spear? What happened to Regina and the others? Will Beau make it back to Oregon? And just what is a redwood gnat, by the way? Well, answer these questions and more when Lumber Dandy and Friends returns for Season 2. Make sure to subscribe and or sign up for occasional email updates via lumberdandy.com. Most of all, thank you for going on this ride with me through our first season of stories together. I hope you're getting something out of it, and if you are, feel free to let me know. Writing and podcasting can get a little lonesome now and then. In the meantime, between seasons, I'll be posting fun stuff online inspired by the world of the show, both fictional and historical. So I hope you'll follow along on Instagram at LumberDandy. And if you think you know someone who should know about Beau Feller and the crew, please do tell them we're here and that there's always room for them by the fire. Until our paths cross again with our next set of stories, may your days be inspiring, your nights full of dreams, and your grooming meticulous. Let's all try to be a little less hard on ourselves this year, okay? We're carrying a lot, and we're pretty frequently more wonderful than we allow ourselves to think. Thanks for being here. Bye now.